Good morning and welcome one and all to the Damage Report. I'm John Arola. He is Brett Ehrlich, who joins us now. Brett, how's it going?
I am he, and I am he who is I am. Genuflect.
Aren't we all? We are gonna talk about the news and politics because that's what we do, that's who we are, and that's how we get paid so we can afford food and air conditioning and stuff. But before the show started, we were talking about tearjerker moments in movies. And now that's all. I don't want to do the show. I just want to go watch Moana and Endgame. I just want to experience some of those again. So thanks, Brett, for that.
Sorry. And it all started because I woke up at 2:30 in the morning to the end credits of Moana, which I've seen billions of times because it's so good. But yeah, that is one of them for sure.
Yeah. Oh my god! I just realized at some point I'm gonna be able to play Moana for. Like
the baby.
I'm not gonna be more specific. The baby, the generic baby. Okay, no, we can I also say I'm gonna reveal a baby related pet peeve in our first social break that is going to make me seem incredibly petty. So if you want to see that, stay tuned. For the rest of you who are probably thinking like, aren't you gonna talk about Mitch McConnell or something? Yeah, no, we will mostly. But hit the like button, share the stream so the people know we're live. Send in comments. I sometimes give away $100 Blue Apron gift cards when I remember to. So maybe this will be your lucky day. And with all that, Brett, are you ready to talk about some news?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. We're gonna be starting off with something that's just the worst, about a person who's just the worst. So everyone buckle up for this. Steven Crowder has been the focus of a new expose from Mediaite, who spoke with five former staffers on his show, Louder with Crowder. And they revealed something that no one was expecting, that Steven Crowder behind closed doors was kind of a creep, that he sexually harassed people, that he weirdly spread prescription drugs and a number of other things that create an incredibly toxic work environment that you never would have suspected from his on-screen persona. That's what's so crazy, is the characters we play on TV can be so different than who we are in real life. But anyway, here is what was revealed. Great work by Mediaite here. One former Louder with Crowder employee told them that during his time on the show, he received unsolicited sexually graphic texts that included photos of Crowder's genitalia. Those texts and images were reviewed by Mediaite, so apparently they are legit. Quote, it always felt like childish behavior in the moment that then felt predatory in hindsight. Like he was always testing people's comfort levels with that kind of behavior. So I don't know, because we're not the person who, you know, we didn't interview these employees. I can't say for sure how that employee, man or woman, overall feels about that experience. It seems a bit mixed from that response. But I can say for myself, you cannot send photos of your genitalia to people that you work with. That's madness. That's utter madness. To do it constantly and not to seem to think that it might be a problem, that there is a like digital paper trail of you doing this. The level of entitlement, the sense of protection from consequences, the idea that it's okay that this would be normalized is bizarre to a normal person. And I'm gonna give you just a little bit more about the exposing himself, then we'll talk, we'll get into more of what was revealed. But they say he habitually exposed himself to other male staffers. Multiple sources confirm this. So it wasn't just through unsolicited text messages. One said, in regards to exposing himself in general, to my knowledge, he only exposed himself to male staffers. It happened all the time. It was a regular occurrence. It usually happened when he was in a really good sort of manic mood. So while we were all disgusted by it and it was never welcomed, it was preferable to him being in a bad mood and how he treated people in that state. Which there is a novel in that paragraph of the multiple levels, the parfait of toxic abuse that you would almost prefer the sexual harassment to the darker behavior that that's temporarily replacing, that he's worse when he's not sexually harassing you because then it goes to a darker place. We're gonna get into more specifics, but Brett, what do you make of this?
Listen, Steven Crowder, what you need to do is instead of, you need to choose one. You either need to be horrible and be that way on camera, but not that way off camera. Or you need to be a, like John Iroll is, a saint on camera, and then off camera you need to be an absolute terror so that people don't believe the stories. John ruins us. John is always sending, like he's just shouting and throwing things at us, which luckily none of us work in the same building, so it's okay. But I just know that he's like that.
Yeah, I make a real mess here at the studio that I then have to clean up with because nobody else is here with me. It's not the best plan.
Obviously, I'm joking. John is not like that. The worst part about John is he's consistently nice, and you have no way to feel morally superior to him, and it's very frustrating.
I'm sure you'll find a way. Don't worry. But look, this is we're sort of look to some extent. It's probably still inappropriate that we're joking about this. The backstory to us joking about this is it just seems so obvious that he would do all of these things. I mean, maybe some of the specifics I wouldn't have expected. The habitual exposing himself to exclusively male employees is some sort of weird, toxic bro need to feel alpha. I don't know. I can't put myself into that place. I'm not broken in the way that these right-wing men are. But this is obviously unacceptable. You cannot treat your employees in this way. That said, he's a disgusting garbage human being. That has been his brand from the very beginning. He is weaponized, monetized awfulness. That's all it is. That does not mean that the employees like should have expected this or that they've done anything wrong. They haven't done anything wrong. Nobody, even people who work at Louder or Crowder, deserve to be treated in any of these ways. But as an outsider, it definitely feels like what you would have expected to eventually find out. Now, we do have a little bit more. One ex-staffer said that during a men's only Bible study that he held in 2021, which is its own whole thing, said that Crowder frequently remarked that, quote, men used to be more physically intimate with each other. And then, quote, would reference a passage from the Bible where Abraham's servant put his hand on Abraham's inner thigh to be closer to Abraham's descendants, dot, 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 balls. I don't understand what any of this is supposed to be. I don't understand the bizarre trauma that goes into a person treating other people in this particular way. I know that many people will immediately leap to the idea that Crowder is closeted or something like that. I have no idea if that makes any sense. There are plenty of other alternative explanations as to why someone would act in this insanely toxic fashion. So and personally, I'm not even that interested in the psychology. His own issues are his own issues. If they stay within his head, then we don't have a problem. It's when he's inflicting all of this on other people who do not consent to it and do not deserve to be treated this way. That's the part of it that I care about.
I utterly disagree with your take on this. 100%. Because and so does the Supreme Court when it wasn't psychotic. So the context of this event is it is a Bible study. It is like an activity. It is basically and you're doing it with Steven Crowder, and theoretically it is a place for you to have conversations like this. You're analyzing the text. And that is still, that's an analysis of the text. That is a take. He's not randomly doing something that you shouldn't be expecting him to do, which is like whip out his junk and send it to you when you're like trying to schedule his appointment at the doctor if you're his personal assistant.
So is the disagreement that you specifically don't have a problem with this latest thing that the staffer is talking about?
I don't have a problem with him being at an all-male Bible study. I think Bible studies are weird, but I'm fine with all-male Bible studies.
I'm not putting that. I'm not putting that on the level of non-consensual dick pics. I'm saying it's not what I would normally do at a workplace. And then to repeatedly reference this one thing about intimacy, regardless of whether you think I'm wrong to think that that's a little bit weird. The staffer, who is a person who likes Crowder enough that he works for him and goes to an all-male Bible study, it stood out to them as bizarre and constant.
No,
this is the kind of stuff. Okay, we can disagree about that, but
yeah, well, this is the stuff that you need to, and that there is already so much here. You're gilding the lily at this point. Mm-hmm. The thing he did that is wrong is that he is exposing himself to people and he is creating a hostile work environment in that respect. The Friends writer's room is like the ultimate case where people were in a writer's room and people were like saying very inappropriate things on the necessary journey in a joking environment and a necessary journey to the final outcome. And that's protected under the Supreme Court's judgment, because that's kind of what you signed up for. And that's like if someone worked for John and someone disagreed with John's take on a specific issue, and John has just an opinion, and he is in the personality that he uses expressing that opinion during something that is, I don't know, I don't have enough information about this Bible study, if it's like, if it's a voluntary thing, if it's part of the job. If it's not part of a job, then it's not even remotely related to it. If it's, if you're mandated to go to a Bible study, that's weird. But yeah, if no, the Bible study, you know,
I get what you're saying, Brett. I don't, so it seems as if you think that I put all of these on the exact same level.
But the way that you talked about it, there's nothing, like, it's weird to like, okay, clutch
then
your
you
pearls
can disagree
about that.
With me. I don't consider it to be clutching pearls. I think it to be a weird thing that clearly was perceived as weird by
the
person.
I'm just saying that
well.
It's something that always
they
happens in these conversations.
On.
Is this is when you cite something you don't need to cite that weakens your argument.
Okay, that's fine. I will leave it up to the audience to think to whether they agree with you or not. I believe that it is incredibly interesting information that's been revealed by an employee who clearly wanted their story to be told. So I'm acknowledging it.
But not every employee that wants their story to be told is telling the truth, John.
Yes, it is entirely possible that a person can lie, which is why Mediaite did not run this story with one source.
But this part you would
talk to five different people.
All right, now we've all said what we have to say, but like I think it's worth saying that people frequently like just take to the papers and say stuff that's just tangibly untrue, trying to like spread a narrative about their former employer, whether they were actually employed by that company or not. That's what I'm saying.
I agree that we exist in a world in which people can lie. I do agree with you on that. Let's move on to other claims, and you can, if you want, briefly tell me whether you believe that they should be publicized or not. So multiple former staffers and a source close to Crowder claim the conservative firebrand, why do people use terms like that? I hate when they do that. Would offer and ask staffers for prescription drugs like Klonopin, an anticonvulsant used to treat seizures, and is also prescribed to treat anxiety, as well as cannabis gummies and opiates like Percocet. Mediaite reviewed text exchanges between Crowder and former employees confirming these claims. Stephen, quote, was known for passing out prescription drugs fairly freely. Former employee who received genitalia photos from Crowder shared a similar sentiment about working for the Star. We've often debated this, they said. It's like any abusive relationship. When it's good, it can be really fun. Most people enjoy the work itself. When it's bad, it's really bad. But over time, most become so numb to it, they don't see how messed up the place is until they get out. So it seems a little bit similar to some of what we've heard coming out of InfoWars, but anyway, what thoughts?
I don't have a problem with him offering people like prescription drugs unless he's pressuring them to take the prescription drugs so that they can still hang out. Like what?
Yes, it comes down to circumstances.
It's me. Hey everybody, it's your friend Brett. This is the part of the conversation that people get into when they've lost the thread. There, in those paragraphs is the sending unsolicited wiener pictures. That's
Brett,
the thing.
Brett,
that's
we
your case.
Did we or did we not lead with that?
Yeah, I'm just. But we John, did. Okay. So because I can't say my like very important part of the conversation because there. I mean, it's the same argument. I can't say my important part of the conversation because you already said something that we both agree is another important part of the conversation. But yes. I'm just saying, like this happens all the time. This is us halfway down a slippery like a slippery slope where like. I think the point that I've already made the point I'm trying to make. You understand the point I'm trying to make. We disagree on, I guess, the way I'm making it. But like,
no, I mean, I think we fundamentally agree quite a bit about levels of severity. I think that we simply disagree about where the threshold should lie for not acknowledging it at all.
I don't. The Bible study thing, and the offering prescription drugs. Minus a proof that the guy pressured them to take it is only serving to weaken your argument. By your definition, I should include everything that ever gets said, no matter what. This, I think, is part of the BS.
I don't believe that. Again, I said we simply draw that threshold at a different point. And I believe that these things are of value, particularly considering the role that he serves in the media, the things that he's chosen to focus on. People want to understand who these public figures are, and particularly in light of the harassment claims that are being made, they want to understand that stuff.
Right. And so then I think there's a point And I, when I read that the paragraph then about the person saying it's good when it's good, it's really bad when it's really bad, and when you don't realize that till you get out of it. 100% understand that dynamic. Everybody, hopefully no one's familiar with that dynamic, but unfortunately many people find themselves familiar with that dynamic. That's good, that's a discussion. In today's discourse, if we're talking about thresholds and essentially ethics math, then what we have to do is say that that is not illegal. In my opinion, from what I read, that doesn't seem illegal, and it definitely doesn't seem it's only illegal in the letter of the law, which we would disagree, like, oh my God, he did cannabis gummies. Oh my God, this is going to arrest him. It's illegal in whatever state he's in. But
I agree, I do not think
that's silly. That's silly, and people offering each other Xanny when they're stressed, like, is unethical, but not, it shouldn't be illegal. And the same thing with being in that relationship or not in a work environment like this, when you actually do kind of become complicit in it, if you're cheering it on and making it a more toxic work environment, and then potentially you kick out at a certain point that hits that specific thing that you're quote triggered by. And
that's interesting.
From his perspective, he's only clear of blame if he's funnily enough, or not funny, but like tragically enough, if he's streaming the whole work environment. If he is streaming it, suddenly all of it becomes protective. But he's not doing it. So he is only torturing them with wiener pictures where unsolicited wiener pictures, which are always bad. And so he should face the consequences for that. We don't need to go like seeing if he's doing all this other stuff.
Yeah, well, that's where perhaps we disagree, but we don't.
All you're doing is farming reasonable people to disagree with you at that point. That's what you're doing.
I think people who don't care about any of this are gonna disagree with me either way. I don't think there's a lot of people who, in theory, if the only thing that was publicized was the fact that he was sending these pictures, I don't think those people would be like, yes, this is bad, he's a bad person. Oh wait, now you're talking about Bible study. No, we should give him a pass. I think there's plenty of people who want to give him a pass, specifically because they don't care about literally any of these things.
No, but by saying the less bad things, all you're doing is exposing people who would otherwise
have been on your side to less bad things. That's where I disagree. I don't think that's all that's being done. I might agree that maybe for some people that is part of it. I don't think that's all that's being done. That's where I would disagree. And I appreciate you making a reference to wrestling to try to win me over. I do appreciate that. With the kicking out, but anyway, look, this is their experience. People will, there are certainly going to be people who line up on the other side. I have no doubt of that. He is going to have his protectors or supporters or whatever, no matter what he does or continues to do or whatever else is revealed. I don't doubt that. I appreciate your perspective. I disagree about whether it is worthy of discussion, that's all.
Hearts to John, we're still friends.
Hearts back to you.
Never been done before.
Yesterday on the show, we talked about Donald Trump making threats against Jack Smith, and since then he decided he's going to make it more explicit. Now, that bleat, so that's a video, we're going to bring up the actual bleat, is from MAGA.com, which he doesn't seem to have a problem with the fact that they're calling themselves MAGA.com. He rebleated that on Truth Social, making a threat that we're not afraid of them, we're gonna do things to you that you wouldn't believe. That's insane. Apparently, he did actually say those words. This is not a case of like AI or whatever. He said those words on Rush Limbaugh's radio show 3 years ago. He was discussing Iran. Now, we can have an issue with that in that particular case or whatever, but that clearly is not the context that it's being used in or that he wants it to be publicized in here. And I just want you to imagine Obama or Bill Clinton or George W. Bush posting that sort of video on their social media. It's, to me, utter madness. Look, it's not the only reason that we're talking about him right now. His trial date has been set. We're gonna discuss that, but Brett, you weren't here for the last threat of how dangerous it will be for Jack Smith if they lock up Donald Trump. So do you think that the threats that he's making is something that we should be talking about, or should we ignore them?
I mean, this is a tough one for me because I think It's a matter of whether you accept this level of discourse from people who represent the best about us, theoretically. The country should take itself quasi-seriously. This is a certain level of seriously and not do stuff like this. I don't like it. I mean, I'm not gonna like tell him to take it down because it's a threat of violence. I think those are just like, those are just hard to prove that when someone says you F with me, you're gonna, you know, you're gonna F around and find out. That could be metaphorical or literal, or you know, violence, or you're gonna lose an election. But yeah, I think it's more par for the course. And so in developing your messaging campaign, you got a message around it. I mean, I'd rather have just in a certain way, I'd rather have something like this from a politician than like a canned, well-worded response that's like, you know, America should be nicer and better. But I think that's the kind of false choice a lot of us are finding ourselves in when like there are people who can accomplish the forceful messaging without sounding like political tools.
Yeah. Yeah, or without sounding like they find the idea of political violence acceptable. In any event, he wants us to be worried about the next steps of these legal processes, and we know when one of them is coming. So when it comes to the classified documents, Judge Eileen Cannon, obviously put in her position by Donald Trump, has now decided that the trial should be moved. They'd been talking about the possibility of starting it this fall. Nope, that will not happen. It's now going to begin in late May of next year. So May 20th, 2024, the DOJ wanted a trial date as soon as this year. Defense attorneys for Trump would have preferred that it never happen ever. But they were saying at least until after the 2024 election. So this means that the trial will begin, I believe, before the RNC, before the actual election, assuming it happens on May 20th. It is now pushed to a point where it would only take a few more little delays to push it after the election. And even if that doesn't happen, if Donald Trump wants to, and I guarantee you Donald Trump wants to make the claim that this is being done to influence the election, if you think it's going to influence the election, I feel like it's going to influence it more in May than it would in October of this year. And that is now something that has been given to him by one of his judicial appointees. Conveniently.
Right. It's tough to argue that the judicial appointees all are favoring him after being put in place because some of the highest profile ones have, I mean, all of them have essentially ruled against him in his voter fraud cases. And I don't know, I mean, we've talked about her. She's kind of been the point, someone who has seemed friendly to him in terms of her decisions along the way. I have I have like an 88% confidence that this will not happen before the general election. It will be pushed for other reasons later. And I think the usefulness for people of this election, this trial are that one, it's just kind of looming. I've said this on the show before. It's looming. It's another thing about Trump that moderates are just gonna be like, I can't handle the guy, he's too much. It'll be good for DeSantis, but he would probably have rather it started happening already. I don't think DeSantis is gonna make it. I think the more that this kind of stuff happens, it opens the door for another candidate who hasn't thrown his hat in the ring yet. Someone who hasn't like gone up against Trump and lost. There's the Northams, there's the Hogans who are kind of waiting in the wings to see, what's that?
Youngkin or Kemp or
the Youngkins, yeah.
Abbott.
They're the ones that are just kind of sitting there and hoping some every, you know, Trump falls after DeSantis face plants and just goes like, we need a reliever here to come in. And they'll be like, all right, fine. And there's that.
Well, we will certainly see. I'm sure there are some people who would have loved to have it pushed up so that it could potentially harm him more during the primary. But we also know that developments in these cases often lead to more support for him. So maybe pushing it back actually hurts him in the primary. I think a case could be made in either direction. I really hope that it happens in May though. I want some clarification on this, but we're all gonna have to stay tuned to find out. With that said, we're gonna take our first break of the hour. When we come back, we're gonna take a look at the actual state of the race. I think a pretty fascinating poll was just released, not because of what it says about Biden or about Trump, but about another one of those X factors. We'll break that down after this.
You
Yes, we closed out that social break with pointing out one area in which Brett is right in our previous agreement. The only one. It's a spot of light in the eternal void of darkness.
Well, John,
argument, but
there can be only one.
There can be only one.
Oh, John, you know what I wanted? In the last segment, I wanted to say something about the candidate who refuses the call and then reluctantly accepts it so he can be the hero of 1,000 racists. You get that, John?
You're a novelist. I get the reference to Campbell. I do get the reference, yes. Thank you, yes. The hero with 1,000 faces. I get it. Yes, I am trying to be a novelist. Anyway, more to come on that. Okay,
Johnny is a novelist because he wrote a novel, period.
Yeah, but you can't like go buy it yet or anything.
I can.
We'll see. If you are an agent watching this though, it's done, it's ready to go. It could probably do for a little bit of cuts, but it's ready to go. Anyway, with that said, hit the like button if you're just joining us now. We're gonna jump into the state of the race with this. If you get your news about the 2024 presidential election from Donald Trump's feed on Truth Social, you probably think he's got this thing locked up. And I will say, do not write him out of this thing. It's still entirely possible that Trump could win it. But the polling right now not only indicates that he's not in the commanding position that he thinks he is, but even that one of the potential like dramatic X factors of the race that might like blow this whole thing up, maybe not so much. And there I'm talking about Joe Manchin. So we're gonna jump through a couple different things that were revealed in this Monmouth University poll. First of all, they found that overall 47% of voters say that they would definitely or probably support Biden, and just 40% that they would back Trump. You know, we're more than a year away from the election, but 7 points, there are worse positions to be in. The thing is, it's not likely to just be a two-person race. Joe Manchin might well run as a third-party candidate for No Labels. You have Cornel West as well for the Green Party. You have some other chuckleheads, who knows what they'll end up doing. But here's the thing, when you throw them in there, so in this particular poll, a potential unity ticket of Joe Manchin and former Utah Governor John Huntsman, that apparently would barely eat into Biden's lead. He would still boast a 40 to 34% advantage over Trump. So 6 points. You add in Joe Manchin with a Republican, and it hurts him by just 1 point and still holds a fairly commanding lead. Now, there's a couple of other interesting results in here, but Brett, I guess I would not have expected this. I would have thought that Joe Manchin's support would have come from, I guess, more conservative Democrats, and it doesn't really seem like that's the case, or that if that is the case, there's not many of them.
What you need, so here's the only take I really have on this, is that the people who are backing a take like this are a political action committee with an intention that is not to have their party candidate win, typically. And Manchin is really the one that everybody's talking about. Anyone who's like complaining about Green Party stuff, blah, 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 whatever, you can do that. It's the same conversation literally every time, and there have been different results literally every time there have been candidates from different third party candidates. But there's like the initiative from that one group that's like the third party take. No Labels, right? And No Labels is only spending money right now and targeting their messaging in states that were essentially swing states that went to Democrats last time. So these kinds of generic polls are good to know the prevailing sentiment, but as we all know, under an electoral system like we have, where it's tiny variations in certain states, you know, wildly vary and drastically affect the outcome, you know. So at the end of that, don't lose the forest for the trees of this Monmouth poll. Focus on getting these packs like No Labels, which also do not disclose who their donors are and what their intentions are. They are only from their actions, they're only acting in ways that hurt Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Potentially. Then I want to move away from the particulars of the top level of the race. And here's just, I want to get into a little bit of the argument that's made by No Labels, which other groups make a similar argument, but they don't necessarily make it for the same reason. So No Labels is saying, we might have to run a candidate like a Joe Manchin or whatever. And they're being really cagey about all of this because people are not happy with the candidates on offer by the Democrats or the Republicans, which on some level obviously is true, but not necessarily in the way that they imply. So the idea that people really don't like the parties, there's a lot of unfavorability towards the parties. Republican Party has an unfavorable rating of 56%, the Democratic Party of 55%. But that doesn't mean that everybody hates both the parties. Only 17% of the electorate holds a negative view of both parties simultaneously. And half of that number is still able to identify a party they dislike more than the other, which means that there is only about 8.5% of the electorate that is at least saying whether it, you know, if you were to really dig in, is what they mean it is, saying, I hate both the parties and I would never support them. They're exactly the same. That is actually a fairly minority position. Now, there are different levels of being unsatisfied with candidates. I wish Biden could be replaced with a better candidate on the Democratic side. But that's not the same thing as saying, I'm just gonna throw up my arms. I can't tell the difference between these. I suppose let Joe Manchin at them, which is, I think, the shallow argument that's being made by No Labels. Any final thoughts before we move on?
No, that's pretty much it.
Okay. We agree? We're back together?
For now, John.
Continue this thing?
But okay. In this abusive relationship. Hold on, I'll break you down and build you up how I want you later.
Okay, so this will not be your last appearance on the Damage Report. Okay, good. Good to know, because I didn't want to have to fill in every Friday. Okay, so with that, let's jump to one more story, starting with, this is actually a really serious one. Like, I don't want to go into it in a jokey sense. This is very serious material, so everyone buckle up, but we're going to talk about it.
It was an emotional day of testimony in Austin, Texas, where a lawsuit challenging the state's abortion ban was heard there. 13 women and an OBGYN who are the plaintiffs say that the law is too vague on what constitutes a medical emergency.
I've had to watch twin A, Isla, deteriorate more and more every ultrasound, and then to give birth to an identical version of my daughter without a skull and without a brain. And I would have had to hold her until she died.
She told me that my daughter has been diagnosed with anencephaly, and that means that her skull and her brain is not fully developed. And that she was sorry, I didn't have any option. I was pregnant. She then called in a caseworker. Caseworker came in and they handed me a paper that said funeral homes on top of it.
We just saw excerpts from the incredibly raw and brave testimony of a group of 13 women in Texas who were denied abortions under the state's new laws that have followed the destruction of Roe v. Wade and are now suing the state. And to be able to hear those experiences and to not care, to think that the law should stay the way it is incomprehensible to me. And I think to a lot of people. But that said, they have been abused by a law that remains in effect. A law that, like many of the laws that have been passed since Roe v. Wade was destroyed, has made abortion unacceptable, banned, but with caveats. So the caveats being generally the health of the person who's pregnant, the viability of the pregnancy. So those things, as we have pointed out repeatedly, and I will never miss an opportunity to point out, is one thing to write on a piece of paper, and it is another thing to attempt to have your particular tragic circumstances fit into that in reality. And what these women have experienced is what women have experienced in many of these states, which is they wrote a vague thing on a piece of paper and they cannot actually have it affect the terrible circumstances that they end up in. Because doctors see it as contradictory, doctors see it as too much of a risk. If you're facing hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines or 99 years in prison, and the only thing that might get you off is maybe one of these judges in a red state will say you were right to do what you did, We don't need to speculate or hypothesize about whether doctors will be as brave as you would need to be in that situation to still help these people who are desperate for help in impossible circumstances. We know based on these experiences, that's not the way it goes. And now we already, every single day, we are adding to the list of people who have been forced to experience things that no one should ever experience, hoping perhaps that the lawsuit that they are pursuing, that is probably resulting in them being harassed and attacked endlessly online, could maybe lead to a just or compassionate result from a court of appeals, or like fingers crossed the Supreme Court. I can't imagine that they would be swayed by this, but as terrible as it must be for them to relive their experience, look, thankfully it allows those of us for whom this is slightly more abstract to understand these terrible circumstances and to hope that something will be done. Brett, what do you think?
I don't think that people who are against abortion are trying to make this situation happen. I don't think they relish it, but I do think they are guilty of their ignorance. Now, at this point, it is willful. They are unaware and they're happy that way. And this happens a lot in politics. There is this whole group of people that are actively voting that have been catered to by political messaging to get in the race so that they can help one party get in power. But essentially, it's like someone who's asleep comfortably or lying down comfortably in their bed, and they just keep like flipping the pillow over to find the cool side, and it makes them feel good. And that's it. That's the only way that making laws like this affect those people. When you make a law like an abortion ban that's vague, you're just like, oh, I don't care. It makes you feel good in your already comfortable world.
Yeah.
And it's so easy for them not to watch this. And it's so easy for them as fundamentalists, I hate to break it to you, you are a fundamentalist, you're a zealot, you're the bad guy in this situation. It is so easy for you to say, to cop out and say, well, my God told me not to. And that there's, and then say really weird, messed up things that I've heard people say before, where it's like, it's God's plan. That's your God that you like? That's not an answer. Tell me more about the plan. Oh, I can't know his plan, but there's something good. You're gonna learn something from it. I don't need to, because at the end of the day, the baby's still dead. All I have is this horrible experience. Oh, but it makes you stronger for heaven. Well, it felt like hell.
You wanna have a little bit more details of what is apparently part of that plan?
Okay.
We've got some numbers. So in 2022, about 2,200 infants died just in Texas. That is an increase of about 11.5% over the previous year. Infant deaths caused by severe genetic and birth defects rose by 21.6%. That reversed a nearly decade-long decline. It had declined by about 15% in the 7 years preceding, and then immediately spiked after this because they decided to make it impossible to, like, even once the tests for these severe genetic issues can be done, even in the states where it's not just blanket banned, states perhaps where it's banned at 6 weeks or whatever, well, that's before all of this testing is done. And so this can be entirely expected. This is by design of the law that they passed. And every one of those instances, like, there was never gonna be a case where this wasn't trauma. Any one of those hundreds of additional deaths was gonna be traumatic. The system is set up in a way that makes it maximally traumatic, that makes it even harder for the family, for everyone involved in this situation. That's one state in 1 year. And now you go across the many, many states doing bans like this on into perpetuity. And think about all of the countless hundreds, thousands of needless traumas that they are producing. And hopefully we will see more of this sort of testimony. Not hopeful because I don't want it to happen, but hopeful because I don't want it to be ignored. I don't want people to be able to look away from this.
And anyway, and the last bit is
final thought.
No one agrees with these people that passed these laws. Most Americans agree with me. Most Americans agree with me in a way that has actually proven in deep red states like Kansas. Mm-hmm. You have the state legislatures passing these laws, but then when it goes back to the people, the entire population, the population is like, we don't want these laws. That's an indication that something's desperately broken. And you, as a good Christian, need to really examine whether you want to inflict this needless pain on good Christians, which is exactly what you're doing.
100%. Okay, we're gonna take our second break of the hour, respond to some comments, and come back with a little bit more for you. Don't go anywhere. T-Pain blames Dirty Dancing for the blatant use of the word baby in a nonsensical way. I don't mind that. I find that movie to be a delight.
So anyway, good.
It's
the
so
best
good.
Song is not on the soundtrack, I think.
I don't know.
Maybe it is.
Don't know.
No, there's
anyway. We don't have time. I would love to talk about how I am utterly in love with her. But anyway, we're gonna move on. Okay, we got important stuff to talk about. Let's jump into it.
So last night we talked to a lawyer who represented January 6th defendant Jacob Chansley, the so-called QAnon shaman. And the lawyer told us that the government, the prosecutors in this case, in violation of the Constitution, hid exculpatory evidence from him and the defense in order to send Jacob Chansley to prison for 4 years, where he is tonight. Now, we showed you that evidence this week. It's surveillance footage that shows federal officers leading Jacob Chansley around the Capitol like tour guides. At one point, they even opened the door of the hollowed Senate chamber for him and usher him in. So the tape proves conclusively that Jacob Chansley, whose every action inside the building was videotaped, committed no felony. And the government hid that fact. And because they did, the media were allowed to paint Jacob Chansley as a dangerous terrorist who deserved to be killed.
So that is all a bit of a knowing dishonesty. He is utterly lying to his audience. But you don't have to take my word for it. You can take a judge's word for it, who had to talk about that show that Tucker Carlson did, because Jacob Chansley, the so-called QAnon shaman, tried to use that broadcast to argue that his guilty plea should be vacated. Basically, it's like new evidence, I suppose. Well, the judge is not buying that. And I want to read a little bit of what US District Court Judge Royce Lamberth had to say about this. These videos are decidedly not exculpatory, the videos shown on Tucker Carlson's show, especially when viewed in context with the miles and miles of footage. Such footage, conveniently omitted by the March 6th program, shows nearly all of Mr. Chansley's actions that day, including carrying a 6-foot-long pole armed with a spearhead, unlawfully entering the Capitol through a broken door, disobeying orders from law enforcement on more than a half dozen occasions, entering the Senate chamber, climbing onto the Senate dais, sitting in the vice president's chair, and leaving a threatening message for the vice president. So saying you cannot simply use the fact that Tucker Carlson decided to take from hours of footage the few seconds that don't show you committing a crime and argue that that means that you did not commit a crime when the video evidence of you committing the crimes is also available. He just chose not to use it. So for Jacob Chansley, no luck. But the judge specifically goes after Mr. Carlson, saying, finally, the court would not be remiss if it did not address the ill-advised television program. Not only was Mr. Carlson's broadcast replete with misstatements and misrepresentations regarding the events of January 6th, too numerous to count, Mr. Carlson explicitly questioned the integrity of this court, not to mention the legitimacy of the entire US criminal justice system, with inflammatory characterizations of cherry-picked videos stripped of their proper context. In so doing, he called on his followers to, quote, reject the evidence of their eyes and ears, language resembling the destructive, misguided rhetoric that fueled the events of January 6th in the first place. That is obviously the entire point of what Tucker Carlson was doing. Nobody found what he was doing to be persuasive that didn't have a deep-seated need to pretend that no crimes had been committed. It was an identity-based position, not a position reached based on an honest assessment of the evidence. Brett, what do you think?
The video that we watched of Tucker Carlson is the equivalent of one of those videos you see online that's like, here is every conversation in Lord of the Rings between two women. And then they, to prove the point that it's a movie just for dudes, it just is the one line. It's like, mommy, will we be okay? Yes, darling. And then that's it. Mm-hmm. They took miles and miles of footage, as the judge says, and just edited it selectively to make the point Tucker is making, not because he cares about justice, not because he cares about fairness, not because he cares about America. Quite the opposite, actually. He only cares about himself and catering to, comma, filleting his entire audience for every bit of insecurity that they have. That is an abusive relationship. He scares them. He makes them feel right about everything. He makes them feel good and terrible at the same time so that they will flock to him en masse. It is horrible. And I'm glad that the judge called him out explicitly. The sad part is a lot of them are going to watch that and be like, judges are fake news.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's what this whole crusade is designed to do. Judges are fake news. Experts are fake news. Academics are fake news. Doctors are fake news. It's all fake news, unless you like it, in which case it's awesome and true. Yeah, it's totally see-through. It is deeply condescending towards his audience that he would think that that would work on them. And it is deeply distressing that it worked on them. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna lighten things up by talking about something far less serious, far less significant. I just want to acknowledge that Moadib said, John had the time of his life. Nice comment, I appreciate it. I'm gonna have to watch that movie again now. Anyway, let's talk about this. Just 6 months after AMC Theaters announced a new plan to do price upcharging on the best seats in the theater, as well as discounted prices on the absolute worst seats in the theater, they're ending the entire initiative. We criticized it at the time, and thankfully most people had no more interest in this thing than we did back then. What they originally said was that preferred seats would be located in the middle of the theater. They would cost a slight premium fee in contrast to its least costly value tier for seats in the parking lot. I'm kidding, front row. While the standard tier would cost the same amount as the traditional ticket and would cover the majority of the seating options. So they released this statement. Competitors did not match either initiative of raising or lowering prices based on the location of the seats. To ensure that our ticket prices remain competitive, the sight line at AMC pilot program will come to an end at participating locations in the coming weeks, and the initiative will not roll out nationwide. And so they had this complicated thing where they tracked people who are part of the AMC Stubs membership program to see if they changed their behavior based on the more expensive or less expensive tickets. And it turned out to not be a moneymaker. And on its face, I found it to be like personally insulting. I know other people spoke out against it. Elijah Wood at the time said, the movie theater is and always has been a sacred democratic space for all. And this new initiative by AMC would essentially penalize people for lower income and reward for higher income. And I think we can all come up with more than enough examples where you are penalized for low income and rewarded for high income. Can we just have one or two things where that's not the case? Thankfully, at least in this case, I think common sense has won out. Brett, what do you make of this?
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly with Elijah Wood. Like history books even mention stuff like this, where like everybody can go to the movies during the Depression, during heat waves. You go there to just, everybody gets to enjoy the same art. Now it's and that's what it should be. And I understand that they're trying to do this, and I understand that they run a business. I am just so ecstatic that this dumb idea was proven dumb by dispassionate algorithms that are calculating potential moneymakers. And it makes you angry in the theater. It should reward people that planned ahead. It should reward people that, and that's how it works, man. There's enough weird psychology that happens about like crowd fill, you know, when there's not assigned seats, about crowds filling in, where like everybody, when they get into a theater, sits an equal amount of distance apart. And then based on how far apart everybody else is, they just fill in the gaps. And so at the beginning, maybe you're like, oh, I wanted to sit in the center, but there's someone kind of near the center, so I'll sit further to the side. By the end, someone who gets there like 5 minutes before the beginning of the movie, since there's only like tiny pockets of seats, they end up sitting closer to your ideal seat and still as weird, close to other people as you would have.
Yeah, that is weird. There used to be an online game of, like there was a row of urinals, and based on who was there, you had to position what the best spot for the next guy to go to was. And there were correct answers in all cases. Anyway, no, I'm glad that they backed off of it. Love Elijah Wood. He's in the most recent season of Yellow Jackets, which I'm watching, and it's so weird to see Elijah Wood in something. It's just a treat. But yeah, look, there's already 1,000 ways in art where you pay more, you get more. You know, in like sporting events, you get better seats or whatever. There's already a lot of things in movie theaters. If you would like to eat during it, it's going to cost more. If you'd like a big reclining seat where you can order food there, you pay more. If you want surround sound and a big screen, you pay more. It's not that they're not doing this in a million ways, but even so, it is possible to cross that line. And I think the sightline thing did that. Anyway, that is all the time we have for the first hour of the show. Thank you to everybody on the linear platforms listening on the podcast as well. For those of you on Twitch, YouTube, and other platforms, there's more to come in the aftermath. We'll see you in just a few.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.